Greetings, authors, and welcome to the first ever episode of Adventures of an Amateur Author podcast. I'm going to be your host through this adventure every week, and my name is Peter James, a.k.a. Knight Rider. Knight Rider is my handle online, on Twitter, as well as some other places for everything related to writing and how I identify myself as an author. So welcome to the premiere episode, wherein I'll give you a rundown of what we'll have. We're in every standard episode of Adventures of an Amateur Author. I'll start off the show and give you my week in writing, how things have been going for me during the week, the things I've learned, the things that I've had to relearn, so to speak, as well as things that have helped me or blocked me in this week. Then I'll move on to anything related in the media, be that books, movies, music, TV, anything in that realm, and sort of tied together there through those two sections. So, like I said, my name is Peter James, a.k.a. Knight Rider. A little bit of background on me for this first episode. I started writing stories when I was in fifth grade, so 10. I was 10, I think. And what I wrote at 10 was awful, terrible. I'll admit to that freely. But it's been interesting because recently I found what I had written, my first ever fan fiction story, actually, based on a game called XCOM that I would watch my father play when I was younger. And so, you know, the writing was awful. Very little in the way of narrative. I think I picked up and dropped characters at random and gave them all sorts of powers with no explanation and had things happen for no reason, no plot really to speak of. And that's kind of to be expected when you're young and you don't know storytelling. You know, and been writing fan fiction ever since, really, in many, many forms. And have plenty of ideas, I would say, for my own original authorship, for my own novels, and other works that I might be able to sell and make a living from. But that's where I started, is fanfics. From that first fanfic based on XCOM, I moved on to original story. That was the next big thing I had written. Moved on to original story about young teenage here. I'm talking about 10, 11, 12, 13, you know, preteen and teen heroes. And they had these devices that gave them abilities of all sorts, elemental abilities, you know, physical ability, super strength and speed and powers and such. It was a little better, but not much better in the way of plot. I was getting practice with original characters then. From there, at 13, I think I discovered Pokemon. I was kind of late to that particular bandwagon, considering it was big in fourth and fifth grade, and I didn't really get a chance to get into it until sixth or seventh. So when I did, Pokemon kind of took my attention for several years. Just obsessed with writing this fictional world where you could be something with the help of your animal companions. It was it very much captured my imagination and sparked a lot of the creativity that still follows student in what I'm seeing today. That's not to brag on myself. It's just to say that to kind of give you a background where I've come from. And since then, I've bounced around here and there with original writings, fanfics, and of all kinds, things like Yu-Gi-Oh, Digimon, anything that I was into in childhood, I would write about and make original characters for. Always OCs. Never wrote about the canon characters. Just characters of my own creation. It was all about character creation. And that's something I've gotten some practice in over the years. And that brings me to here. That actually is a very good segue into what I'm talking about today. So the novel I'm working on right now, my current project, is called Dragon by Night. Now, Dragon by Night has an interesting origin story as to how I got into writing it. You'll notice I didn't say come up with the idea, because I didn't, really. What happened was, when I turned 17 in my last year of high school, I was introduced to a site called Gaia Online. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's mainly an anime role-playing website. Forums, mainly for that. And they have some games and things, too, and lots of... they have their own whole culture there, almost. And, there were some things I dropped into. I think the very first roleplay I got into there was a Pokemon roleplay. After that, I had some ideas for a Teen Titans original character. And so I started a Teen Titans roleplay on Gaia Online and based it in the South in Era City in Texas. And that's kind of where Dragon by Night got its start, because the main character of Dragon by Night, my protagonist, is my OC character from that roleplay. His name is Dragon. His code name Dragon. His real name is Lancelot Garen. And Lancelot has a twin named Daniel, Donnie. So Lance and Donnie are brothers who are estranged after an incident that happened 3 years in the past, wherein their parents were murdered by an as-yet-unknown assailant. And so each of them blamed themselves and were separated for 3 years, and then now they're coming back together at 16, and they are learning how to work together. Along with Lance and Donnie, they are joined by teammates Kit, Sean, and Petra. Now, Kit is a shapeshifter along the lines of Beast Boy with plant elemental powers. She can make plants grow at will, and she has some good speed to her, so it's nothing supernatural, but it's just from practice. Some good speed to her with throwing knives and weapons of sorts, and so she wears these tight ninja tights, with these black tight shorts. They go from about mid thigh almost to knee, all the way up to right above her nose, and it's like a form-fitting mask thing that she zips into, and it covers most of her face, and so she's got a very ninja-like quality about her. And over this black mask thing on most of her, she's wearing this white gi, and the big sleeves of this white gi is where she stores her weapons and things. And of course, she does the animal transformation, the shapeshifting. Sean Jones is hero alias Dust, and by the way, Kit's hero alias is Wild Child, and Sean Jones' alias is Dust, because Dust has these powers based on one particular video game, and it's basically, his powers are digital realization. He can make anything that's digital become real, but it's not omnipotent in a way that it destroys things. It destroys the game if he uses it without knowing it. So he has focused on one particular game where he does not need to destroy components in order to make the powers work. And he's focused on one game, and the way these powers manifest themselves in the real world is with this dirt mist, this colored dirt sand mist around parts of his hands, fingers. He can sort of cloak himself in it to lift himself up off the ground, that kind of thing. That's what Dust's powers are about. Petra Reedman, hero alias Faris. Faris is somewhat of a psychic character. She is blind, and she has a power centering around her aura, so she can manipulate her aura in different ways. One of her main powers is her aura vision. She's able to see other people's auras, where when it's someone of any kind of significant power, that person's aura is colored heavily based on their personality. And regular mortal humans are just gray to her vision. They're kind of like background noise, almost. And so she only sees individuals. She doesn't see landscape or anything like that, but she sees auras. So this aura vision is one part of her powers, and she has other parts where she can manifest it as wings on her back to fly. And so Faris is kind of... She's also, with her ability to see auras, she sees a certain level of things that don't, that aren't otherwise there. And so they aren't visible to regular eyes. And so Faris acts somewhat as the visionary for what is supernatural in the story. Anything out of place that is paranormal, she's able to instantly discern things about it through her horror vision. That's one of her main roles in the story. Now, I haven't told you about Dragon and Downey's powers yet. Lance, hero alias Dragon. His powers are, as you'd guess, fire manipulation. Both he can both fire breath and fireballs in his fists. It's a form of pyromancy that's very limited, and so as well as the power of flight and strength. So he's flying brick with you know flight strength, and then the third power is fire. So he's a brick, and I admit it. He's a brick. I don't care. He's fun. I like him. and his brother Syke, Donnie Garen is Syke. Syke's powers are about kinetic manipulation, where you know any kind of he can basically take the energy from around him and store it for a little while, and unleash it at times. And he's very focused about it, very controlled, so that most use out of it. And he's not a high voltage battery. He's instead a high efficiency device for that battery, if that makes sense. And so his powers are kind of about, you know, forming these kinetic fields where it's a force field where he's pushing back against something, or he's, he's generating like a kinetic force jump, like beneath him to jump real high or far, because he's one of the only Titans who can't fly, literally speaking, fly. Dust has methods of lifting himself and going places, but it's not really flight. And Kit can transform into birds, giant birds of prey, and Lance can fly, and Petra can fly, but Donnie, Syke, is not really a flying person. So he's able to kind of keep up that way. He's kind of the vanilla person, almost. His powers are very vanilla. But it kept him that way because he's got flavor to him. You know, you're kind of balancing the two. So, Dragon My Knight started off with those characters in a roleplay, and it was titled Teen Titans South, and we basically played that for several years before it kind of trickled away, and everyone's attention started falling more to school, real-life things, and things that were important, and so things kind of passed away there. But we stayed in touch, and I asked everyone in the group, would you guys mind if I decided to write the first story arc, at least, of this roleplay into a novel? And the general consensus was, are you kidding? We'd be mad if you didn't do that. That'd be great. So here I am. I've been writing Dragon by Night for maybe a year or two because I kind of got stuck or left it for a year and a half while I did something else. You know, I got married, so that kind of took away a lot of my attention. So I'm back on it now, and it's in progress. It's in good shape. And that's where I'm going to start my week of writing this week. So my week, this last week in writing, has been blocked. It started off very blocked. I could not write. What had happened was I had finished a chapter before, and I had started work for the next couple paragraphs so I could pick up and have not just a blank slate for this next one. I'd have something to work on, and that wound up being a mistake, leaving the first couple paragraphs for the next chapter alone for a couple days before I came back to it. Because what happened, I kind of started something that I wasn't really, really needing to do. It wasn't part of the narrative. It was just something I thought was in there for flavor, and so it was derailing the story. There was a plot point that I was leaving for later, and how things develop in the subplots to intertwine into the main story. There was a plot point in there that I wound up realizing this is way too early for this, and I've got to do something about this. It was way too much for me to be able to salvage. It's easier for me to just scrap something and start over. So that's what I did. So I had to scrap the entirety of chapter 7. It's chapter 7 in the novel. I had to scrap the entirety of what I had written, maybe 1,000 words or so, and start over. So once I did that, once I started over, I knew I had to use my tools of scene and sequel that I've been taught through my favorite author, Jim Butcher. Jim Butcher gave these tools out on his live journal as part of a series about, you know, how this is how I write. If you're looking for help in how to write in storycraft, this is what I can give you. This is what I know. So he put that up there for us to see. Pardon me for just a second here. Better. So the tools that I'm using mainly, I've got three main tools that I'm using here. Actually four. Okay, the first is my character sheet. So every character has a profile that I fill out for them, where I list their name, their alias, their age, a few things about them, their tags, you know, things about them that are physical descriptors that will come up whenever I'm describing who they are or bringing them up. Their traits, which are things that are... traits are things about you that kind of define who you are as a personality, less physically. And so, like, one of Dragon's traits is Draconic. He's dragony, and we'll get to that. And so, as well as their personal motivation, what really drives them, what their goals are, kind of what their general purpose is in life, in the story. And then their personal demons, things that bother them, things that are holding them back, their secrets or their conflicts with other people, to help keep track of those. And each character gets one of those. Main character, you know, all the protagonists, the antagonist, all the antagonists, everyone gets one of those. In addition, I also have a chapter breakdown. I have plotted out every plot point because I had the benefit of taking this from a roleplay that already had all these plot points laid out. And so I just took those plot points and said, here's this plot, here's this plot, we'll do this, and this, and this, and this order, and here's the side plot, we'll do this, and this, and this, and took those four or five lists of main plot and subplots all together, and kind of took elements from them and kind of laid out, like element A from main plot A, that's in chapter one. Okay, and element B from main plot A, and an element A from subplot one is, boom, that's in second chapter. And so forth, and it kind of builds and builds. So that I know where it's going. I know what each purpose of each chapter is and what it's doing. I highly recommend it, too. And so that's my pre-writing. And then I also have two more tools that I use. Those are kind of preliminary work that you put in before you start to write the novel. And then the other two tools I use in writing the novel are something called the tools of scene and sequel. So, scene is where action happens. It's where the plot of the story is happening. Sequel is where your characterization happens. It is where the heart of your story is. Scenes. Scenes are things... Okay, in every scene, your character... You have a point of view character. The character who is carrying that scene, who is... You're following in their point of, in their perspective, that scene. And so, you've got that person. For this particular chapter, it has been Dragon. And then with this new scene I'm writing, it has been Kit. So, Dragon and Kit, Lance and Kit are the POVs for this chapter, for both scenes in this. And there's a sequel in between each, so that's how it works. It goes scene and sequel, you alternate. But more on that in a moment. In a scene, you have your point of view character, and you have that point of view character's goal, what they're trying to accomplish. It could be something as simple as, I want to eat. Or it could be something like, I'm going to go find this guy to get information out of him. And so that's your goal. Your character has a goal, something they're trying to accomplish to help drive the story. The conflict is the next thing you need. In conflict, stories are all about conflict. Without it, there is no point in reading about it. So the conflict is where someone is providing opposition, namely your antagonist, in whatever form. It's making your protagonist's goal harder to achieve. That is the point of the conflict. So you have your POV, your character's point of view, you have your goal, and you have your conflict. Lastly, you have the scene, you have the answer to the scene question, which is a whole other concept we'll get into, but basically, it's will your character achieve the goal? And so the answer to that question is the next part of that. You could say yes, you could say no, you can say yes but, no but, and so forth. Some of the worst answers are yes, some of the best answers are no but, or no furthermore, no and furthermore, or something like that. Complications. In order of best for your story, to drive the plot, it goes no, in descending order for the best answers, for the answers to the scene question, are yes but, no and furthermore, yes, and no. So, the policy for that, the reasoning for that is, if you simply answer the scene question, no, that stops your story dead in its tracks. Nothing else happens. And so you're kind of stuck. If you answer the scene question, yes, that resolves the conflict instantly and is not gratifying to the reader. If you answer the scene question with a yes but, that's a little better, because you are, yes, they're getting what they originally set up, but some things are getting complicated. There was a secret, there was a part of that they didn't understand. It's a consequence that they're having to face. Okay, and that is the next best. And the very best is no, and furthermore. You're going to deny them what they're going for, and then further make things bad for them. This is the way you make that's the main way you make a compelling character who will sympathize, because everyone's had things like that to pile up on them. And that's that in a nutshell. That diatribe is to fit into explain what the scene answer is. So for a scene, you have the point of view, you have their goal, their conflict, and the scene answer. Sometimes called the setback because of that yes but or no and furthermore thing. You know, you have the complication that goes in there, so that's the setback. So that's what I refer to it as, is the setback. Point of view, goal, conflict, setback. You need those four things to write a scene. So I went back to that with this first scene that I was writing in this novel. And so point of view, Lance. Goal, talk to his friends about this particular issue that's bothering him. It's a plot point. I don't want to give it away. Conflict is that they do not react in the way he intends. And then the setback is that, I don't want to give away the setback, but I had the setback there to see it to set up the sequel. Okay. So once I had used those, the words started to flow. You know, everything started to come back together, as it should be. As a rule, you can generally let whatever dialogue you feel is appropriate for the scene you're writing and not have to micromanage what your characters are saying. And for me, since I've known those people for so long and known those characters for so long, it's not hard at all for me to picture what that character's reaction would be, because I've come to know them in a way almost as well as those people have. So it's not hard for me at all in this case. The big thing I've learned for this one is to, you know, I'm able to keep them true to the character because I know their character really well, and also because I use those tools to set out, you know, who they are as a person with traits and tags and things and their motivations and demons and all those things that help drive them. And then, the scene kind of flowed based on, you know, I wanted the tone of the scene to be this, I wanted the theme of this scene to be something of, okay, he's confessing to his friends, he's facing their judgment, basically, and submitting to whatever they decide is right. So, because he messed up. The previous scene, he made a huge mistake, and everyone's paid for it, and now he's got to face facts. So, after the scene, there had to be a sequel. In the sequel, he knows they might be angry or upset at him. He is afraid that they might kick him out of the group, but he makes the choice to abide by what they decide. And that sequel follows a formula for how we react to things as people, how we as humans process information and deal with things. So the sequel has four parts as well. The scene, remember, it had POV, goal, conflict, and setback. Well, the sequel has emotion, reason, anticipation, and choice. Those are much more simple to explain. Emotion, that is the pure feeling of whatever just happened affecting your character. Reasoning is you apply to it. You understand things about it. You're inside about it. That helps to understand. That helps to highlight what your character is thinking. Okay. Then you have anticipation. Anticipation is where you think what might happen. Sorry about that. Anticipation is where you look for, is where you look towards, forward to what might be happening. You're anticipating what is going to happen as a result of the previous scene. And finally, the choice. The choice is what starts the next scene. So, the choice, every character makes a choice to do something based on what they experienced in the sequel. The analogy that Jim Butcher used, and that I will give to you because it was such a good example for me, is that of a car wreck, if you've ever been in a car wreck. So you're at a stoplight, and you are going through, and you are hit by someone, and you have a wreck. So in the car wreck, the first thing you feel is you might be afraid that you've been injured or hurt. You might be afraid that the other person is hurt or injured. That's the first thing that you feel. You have an emotional reaction first. Then your logical brain kicks in, your reasoning, your maturity, and says, oh, that person might be hurt. We might need to call 911 for them or for me. You know, what if, you know, I'll need, you know, you'll think insurance covers this. Or if you're not covered, you think, oh, no, I don't have coverage for this. And then you have anticipation. That flows into anticipation. If you have insurance, the anticipation will go, okay, this might not be as bad as it looks at first because of gun insurance and it's covering and it's covered for this and whatever. And, you know, that's your anticipation and your choice. You know, you can choose to speed away and leave the scene before anyone gets your information, or you could choose to stay and give your information, your insurance, and you know, be reasonable and decide to face facts. So that's a good that's the good example of what the sequel does. The sequel allows you to get into the mind of your character, the mind and heart of your point of view character from the previous scene, and allows the readers to understand where they're coming from. Even if they do not agree with your character's choices, if you give them that sequel, that insight to who their character is, they will always empathize with them. They'll know that they'll understand where they're coming from, and so they like them more when they understand them. So it helps to keep the readers interested and enjoying your characters. So the way it goes in the novel, and the way Jim Butcher recommends, and the way I've decided to do it based on his recommendation, is to write your novel scene, sequel, back to back to back to back. Just like that. You alternate your scene and your sequel. Sometimes in a sequel, you don't need to go into depth on every little thing. Sometimes you can skip over some of the elements of the sequel, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. As long as you keep every element of that sequel in the same order, you will be able to use every element somehow. You don't have to do the anticipation or the choice. You know, sometimes that's good for dramatic effect because you see their emotion and the reason. But then you're hidden to what their decision was, and you don't know what's going to happen, and it keeps you flipping through to the next chapter to find out what's going on and what their plan is. That's how those things can be used. And this is all stuff that Jim Butcher has written. Very little of it is my experience, and I'll tell you when it is mine. Mostly I'm just regurgitating what I've heard, what I've learned, because it's helped me so much. Before I started to use these tools on this novel, I would never be able to write because I never had the full plot line out for myself to give myself the benefit of knowing where I was working towards. And second of all, because they're just such easy tools that they make everything simpler. When you break every scene and sequel down, you're able to measure the individual progress of your novel over time. Even though it's taken me a couple years to get to this point with this novel, I don't feel like it's that slow because I know how quickly it's going. It's going at a reasonable pace. For my career, I'd like it to move faster because the sooner I can finish this book, the sooner I can write the next, and the sooner I can write the next, eventually, you know, the next and next and onward with each book, and eventually one of them will sell and I'll start to make money, and that will take my career off, and I'll be able to live eventually off that in years, you know, in the years to come. So, like I said, once I started to use scene and sequel back to back with this novel, it's been much easier. And when I forgot about that for the starting of the next chapter and kind of, you know, started writing from that point, things started to fall apart. I don't know if it's because of my own ineptitude or if it's because of the, you know, my simple, you know, I only think in one way kind of thing. I don't know. What I do know is that once I got back on track and started using those tools the way they were meant, the words were much easier to write. It was much simpler to sit for an hour or 2 hours and type out a bunch of words on my netbook. So it was very easy. That's been pretty much my week in writing. That's everything about it, really. Sort of relearning that and seeing the benefits of it come again. And so been working on that chapter. I got that scene written and got the sequel, and then writing the next scene, wherein the Titans go off and take care of another thing that pops up, you know. And that's I'll talk about that probably next week. Moving on to related media this week, I mentioned Jim Butcher's my favorite author. His new book Skin Game just came out last month in May, and I just finished it. I finished it middle of this last week, and just started it again because it was that good. That book was a really wild ride, totally awesome every step of the way. Jim Butcher, he's only getting better as the series, The Dresden Files, goes on. You know, when it started, you can tell that he was sort of in the same place that I am now. He tells the story of it, and I'll let you find that on YouTube. I can refer you to some good videos there if you message me on Twitter or on YouTube, and I will definitely point you towards those videos where he talks about that. But when he started it, it was kind of as a project, and he took it to his teacher after the first couple chapters, and the teacher said, "Yes, you will sell this. Yeah, this is of sellable quality." And she said, "So you better go out and plan it out. And so Jim did, and he came back the next day with the story plan. He says, "You think this many books is fine?" And it's a way huge number. It's 20 books. He said, "You think 20 books would be okay?" And the way he tells the story, she didn't want to dampen his spirit because she knew he would never do it, be able to sell 20 books. And she said, "You know what? If you can sell 20 books, I think you'll be doing just fine." And I've been following the series ever since 2007, 7 years ago. So, in the 7 years, I consumed all 15 books, and then all 20 some odd side stories, save a couple that are more recent since I've been living, less on my own that I haven't had as much time for reading. So that those short stories have gone by the wayside. But one thing I've really noticed in reading Jim Butcher's latest book is that lately the stories, they're becoming more about issues of humanity, remaining human in a world of supernatural chaos. When you're caught up in so many supernatural plots that, can sometimes cause your human friends to become collateral and get hurt or get killed or what have you, that there's a very universal there's a very universal mourning process in kind of self-flagellating that Harry Dresden does when something bad like that happens to someone that he cares about. And so it's the story, the main story of the Dresden Files about Harry's characterization is really becoming more about humanity. And I've really noticed lately that where I've seen that before is, I'd have to say, Star Trek, The Next Generation did that. When Star Trek was set after humanity developed warp drive technology, utopia began on Earth because we got in contact with aliens. And what seems to have happened is we kind of forgot about our own problems when we started to interact with other species. And so it kind of, there's this theme of humanity being wanting to help or wanting to be involved in other people's affairs. You know, it's kind of nosy. The prime directive has to be there to kind of stop us because we want to butt in and fix everyone's problems sometimes, even when it's not our place. And that's a very universal thing. You know, sometimes we think that we can be there to help our friends, and it really becomes that we need them much, much more. And that, we thought we were helping them, but really, and then when we needed them, they were there for us in an instant. And so that's a very human thing, a very universal thing about us that I feel that these stories are capturing very well, both Dresden Files and Star Trek, in every iteration. And so I really feel like those are the kind of stories that are very enjoyable when you can understand something about human nature in it, as well as empathize with characters, and you see these cool things happen, and these plot lines of importance to you because you care about the characters, and so you're invested in them and in their plot. It's very interesting. It's very much a universal thing for us to enjoy stories, be the movies, songs, poems, novels, short stories, even campfire stories, jokes. There's many, 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 many forms that prose takes, and sometimes it's not always prose. There's many, many forms that a narrative can take to tell you a story, convey a character, convey a meaning, and convey an experience. And that's one thing, really great thing about stories that we have never really lost. It's always been part of our history as humans. And that's about as deep as I want to get into this week on the very first episode of Adventures of an Amateur Author. So, I think that'll do it for me for this week. if you've ever listened to my other podcast, Inside Nebwinner, usually I have like a thing where I'm like, well, you can find me and find us and talk to us here. But really, it's just me. So if you want to tweet at me, you can find me on Twitter at Knight Rider Books. That's NITEWRITERBOOKS. And I'm on Twitter all the time, and I get notifications as soon as anything happens on my phone as well. So feel free to drop me a line anytime that you have a thought or have an interest that you'd like to discuss, or even would like to have a discussion about those things, other nerdy things. Feel free to contact me there and let me know. Always drop me a line whenever you feel compelled. And I'd like to give a special note at the end of every show. The intro and outro music that we use for the show is entitled Backdrop Story by composer I Am Brahms, provided by freesoundtrackmusic.com. So check them out for all your royalty-free sounds and several very good tracks, including this one. So remember to tweet me. Remember that I'm in touch anytime that you'd care to be. And thank you for listening this week. If you are interested in other things that I'm doing, I have another podcast entitled Inside Neverwinter, where my co-host and I, J-Dog, we talk about everything that's happened in the week and the news coming up in the coming week in the game Dungeons & Dragons Neverwinter, the online MMORPG. So if you're a fan of those things, check us out there as well. I'm also on YouTube at DJ Takuya. I've just started a new Let's Play series on Pokemon Sage, a fan-made Pokemon game. Lots of love and lots of tender, very much a labor of love has gone into that game. A lot of love went into making that game, and it's very, very good. Set in an all-new zone, an all-new district, an all-new region, and with all new Pokemon, completely new, and I'm nuzlocking it, going in blind. So if you'd like to hear more of my voice, you can find me there. So, thank you for listening this week, and hope you have some happy writings, and I shall see you next time. Bye-bye.